Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. Among all the reports from returning NDEers that God is love, that everything is love, are occasional stories of terrifying experiences from NDEers who do not want to remember or report what they saw. Because of their fear and their desire to forget, we have relatively few of these distressing NDEs to talk about. But why should there be any at all? If God, Jesus, heaven, even the nature of God's creation itself, is the embodiment of love, then where does the threat of losing that love possibly come from? And more importantly, why? Let's first explore the nature of NDEs themselves. The NDEs expressing love are so attractive that many experiencers don't want to return to their lives on Earth. Some would forsake even their families, mates, and children. So overwhelming is the love there that draws them in. Most say they were told they had to return. A few are given the choice. And the ones who decide to stay on the other side, we can't account for. Their bodies simply die, and we're left to wonder why they didn't make it. Nearly all adult NDEers who cross into the light report going through a profoundly objective life review, an experience they find overwhelming because it demonstrates in exquisite detail how we hurt and failed others. What we're judging for ourselves, apparently, is our own ability to love. In other words, what our capacity is to fit into the love of heaven itself. We come to our life review out of this life on earth, where we were given the free will to be loving and kind or fearful and selfish. But that free will is often offset by the circumstances we live under. Broken or loving homes, poverty or prosperity, sickness or health, etc. Who we become in this life and what we can forgive ourselves for rely heavily on the details. One reason more than half the people on the planet believe in reincarnation is the unfairness of any one given life. If you're treated cruelly as a child, from what will you manifest loving kindness to others? And yet it can happen. The life review reveals all. NDEers often say that even after a horrible life review, only they are the judge, that God does not judge us for our failures so far. But remember, God knows the NDEer's life isn't done yet, and NDEers know it too. They return to the body with a heightened sense of appreciation for what love is all about. The life review that comes when this body finally dies is the one that counts, and that's why so many returning NDEers change their behaviors, relationships, jobs, and basic values upon their return. They want to make up for lost time and grow their love to find their place to fit into that heaven of love they witnessed, to become one with God love when they die. The ones who return unchanged by their near-death experience are exercising their free will as well. In fact, to love or not love may be the only free will choice we have on earth, and ultimately it's probably the only one that matters. Many religions cite the Bible to teach that fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. My take on that is, if God is love, then fear of not loving enough is the beginning of wisdom. Well, what are the spiritual consequences of not loving? What if our final life review demonstrates we only gave anger and hate to others as the result of our own fear and selfishness? Do we get a chance to reincarnate, to try to live a more generous life, or do we isolate ourselves in darkness out of our own sense of unworthiness? God still loves us, but from afar. Why? Because our inability and failure to love and forgive ourselves is wanting. Our poor capacity to love anything at all makes our presence in heaven impossible for now. The possibility of that self-imposed isolation is what gets seen during a distressing NDE. And those visions are horrifying compared to the community of love God offers. The life review of our free will choices lays it all on the line. Some listeners know I was editor of Ion's quarterly magazine, Vital Signs, for a number of years, and I still turn to early issues for their important content. It was only the first year's second issue of that magazine that delved into a remarkable discussion of distressing NDEs, still relevant today. So let me read it to you. It's titled Frightening Near-Death Experiences. Publication of the article Distressing Near-Death Experiences in the February 1992 American Journal of Psychiatry has marked the first attempt to document phenomenological patterns within frightening experiences. Co-authored by Ion's Director of Research Bruce Grayson, MD, and President Nancy Evans Bush, the article reports the results of an introductory descriptive study which surveyed 50 reports of frightening NDEs collected over a period of 9 years. The authors note that the classic NDE reports included well-known clusters of characteristics, feelings of peace or bliss, joy, and a sense of cosmic unity, together with such elements as out-of-body experience, entering a darkness, perceiving a light, meeting spiritual beings or deceased persons, encountering an uncrossable boundary, a life review, and an altered sense of time. However, they add, sporadic reports have described distressing events that are in some ways similar to the prototypical near-death experience, but characterized by feelings of fear or despair, and often described as nightmarish or hellish. The 50 reports summarized in their study were gathered over the course of 9 years from individuals who contacted IONS and were willing to describe their experiences. Review of the literature. The author's substantial survey of the near-death literature observes that early published reports of near-death experiences contained no distressing experiences, which may have deterred subsequent investigators from seeking or acknowledging them, and that the commonly used research instruments for identifying and measuring near-death experiences based on these early studies may perpetuate the bias against recognizing distressing experiences. The survey notes that as early as 1978, cardiologist Maurice Rawlings reported finding substantial numbers of terrifying experiences and speculated that they were quickly repressed, but that his findings were not supported by other large studies. In a small study by Charles Garfield, also in 1978, 22 of the experiences included demonic or nightmarish visions of great lucidity, and another 11% reported alternating blissful and terrifying features. The literature review indicates that by 1981, other researchers were mentioning having encountered frightening deathbed visions and partially negative or hellish NDEs, and that a Gallup poll published in 1982 estimated that 1% of near-death experiencers mentioned a sense of hell or torment. Based on her clinical experience, medical social worker Kimberly Clark Sharp reported in 1986 on the reluctance of individuals who have had frightening experiences to share them with researchers and a resultant underestimation of their frequency. The new survey acknowledges Margot Gray's 1985 study in Britain, in which she described frightening encounters as characterized by feelings of extreme fear or panic, emotional or mental anguish, desperation, intense loneliness, and desolation. And PMH Atwater's 1988 work described experiences that included lifeless apparitions, barren expanses, threats or silence, danger of violence, a sense of hell, and coldness. Study findings. The Gray-Evans-Bush study identifies three distinct types of frightening experience. One is similar in its features to the classic peaceful NDE, but is interpreted as terrifying. The second involves a paradoxical experience of nothingness or of existing in an eternal, featureless void. And the third type includes hellish imagery and may begin with a sense of falling down a dark pit. All three types may include such elements as out-of-body experience, encounter with a presence, a boundary, and other features of the prototypical near-death experience, although these are most likely with the first type. So here's the first type, the classic NDE interpreted as terrifying. These experiences involve common features of the classic near-death experience, such as the light, but are perceived as terrifying rather than comforting. Often, says the article, the individual identifies loss of ego control as the terrifying aspect of the experience. If by some means the individual is able to let go into the experience, the feelings of fear may dissipate, leading to a rescue and or a peaceful resolution of the NDE. The following greatly abbreviated experiences are typical of this type. 1. After a few minutes, my body began to shake violently. I then experienced a sensation of floating above the room. I saw a clear picture of myself lying on the table. I saw the doctor and the nurse, whom I had never seen before, and my husband standing by my body. I became frightened, and I remember strongly feeling I didn't like what I saw and what was happening. I shouted, "I don't like this," but I was not heard by those in the room. A second example. As I looked under me, a strong wind was pulling me into what seemed like a funnel shaped like a cornucopia, only opened at both ends. I was flying and drawn directly into the vortex or funnel. At the end, the lights were blinding and crystal flashing was unbearable. As I reached to the very end, I was reaching for the sides, trying to stop myself from falling off the end into the flashing crystal. I felt that I did not want to go on. I vividly remember screaming, "God, I'm not ready. Please help me." As I write this letter, I am reliving it. I remember when I screamed, an arm shot out of the sky and grabbed my hand, and the last second I was kept from falling off the end of the funnel, the lights flashing. The third example. I found myself no longer in the room, but traveling through a tunnel, slowly at first, then picking up speed as I went. I found myself growing more and more afraid as the speed picked up, and I realized that I was headed toward the pinpoint of light at the end of the tunnel. The thought came that this was probably what it was like to die. I decided then and there that I wanted to go no further, and I tried to backpedal, stop, and turn around, but to no avail. I could control nothing, and the pinpoint of light grew larger and larger. Before I knew it, the light exploded around me. My attitude at this time was quite terrified. I did not want to be there, and I was determined that I was not, by God, going to stay. There were beings all around me, quite amused at me. They didn't seem to mind one bit that I was cranky and demanding to know where I was and who did they think they were anyhow, snatching me away like that. Put me back, damn it, put me back. Slowly, my ruffled feathers became smoothed, and I felt peaceful and calm. I would ask a question, and instead of receiving a wordy reply, they would show me the answer. We moved from place to place with no effort at all, and I learned a great deal. Now here's the type described as going into a void. According to the Grace and Evans Bush study, this second type of terrifying experience involves a paradoxical sensation of ceasing to exist entirely, or of being condemned to a featureless void for eternity. Sometimes this type of experience includes a sensation of despair that life as we know it not only no longer exists, but in fact never did, that it was all a cruel joke. And like the first type, these generally contain fewer features of the peaceful NDE and do not appear to convert to the peaceful kind with time. And here are the examples. The first, I passed through different stages of torment. Voices were laughing at me, telling me all of life was a dream, that there was no heaven, hell, or earth really, and that all I had experienced in life was actually an hallucination. I found myself hurling toward the final torment. I was to be suspended in a total vacuum with nothing to see or do for eternity. I was naked, and I was sad about that because I thought, if only I had clothing, I could pull the threads and knot them or reweave them for something to do, and If only I were sitting in a chair, I could splinter it and try to make something of the splinters. And then the overwhelming realization that eternity was forever and ever, time without end. What to do in a vacuum forever? And here's the second example. It was at that moment that I left the planet. I could feel myself and see myself going away, way up into the air, and then beyond the solar system, beyond the galaxy, and out beyond anything physical. And at first, I thought I'd just go with it, see where it went, and I stayed as calm as I could, just kind of went with the whole thing. And that part of it was all right for a while. But then as the hours went on, with absolutely no sensation, there was no pain, but there was no hot, no cold, no light, no taste, no smell, no sensation whatsoever, none, other than the fact that I felt a slight sensation of traveling at an extremely fast speed. And I knew I was leaving the Earth and everything else, all of the physical world, and at that point it became unbearable. It became horrific. As time goes on, when you have no feeling, no sensation, no sense of light, I started to panic and struggle and pray, and everything I could think of to struggle to get back, and I communicated with a sister of mine who passed away, and at that moment I went back into my body, and my body had been moved to the hospital. And then the third example. It was worse than any nightmare. You cannot put into words the emotions that I felt. I felt the quietness, except for the screaming within my own body, which was no longer a body but a small ball of light. I felt the aloneness, except the awareness that I was all mankind. I felt the emptiness of space, the vastness of the universe, except for me, a mere ball of light screaming. On returning home, I found myself not wanting to talk to anyone. I felt that no one existed except me. I continued my duties as wife and mother, but I would watch and wonder why. I would watch TV and think that I created all that was shown on it. And then I would wonder why I didn't know the outcome of a movie, and then I would rationalize that I was creating as I watched, so naturally I had not created an ending until the end. And this is the hellish imagery experience. The study found that this smallest group of experiences, like the void experiences, this type contained fewer recognizable features of the classic NDE and rarely converted to a peaceful experience with time. The first experience. My feet hit a chair and broke my fall, or my neck would have been broken. I hung in the rope and strangled. I was outside my physical body. I saw my body hanging in the rope. It looked awful. I was terrified, could see and hear, but it was different, hard to explain. Demons were all around me. I could hear them, but could not see them. They chattered like blackbirds. It was as if they knew they had me and had all eternity to drag me down into hell to torment me. It would have been the worst kind of hell, trapped, hopeless, between two worlds, wandering lost and confused for all eternity. The second example. I was led around a well, from a side of bliss to a side of misery. I did not want to look, but he made me look, and I was disgusted and horrified and scared. It was so ugly. The people were blackened and sweaty and moaning in pain and chained to their spots. One was even chained to the evil side of the well. The man was so skeletal and in such pain, and I knew that I would be one of those creatures if I stayed. I hated it there. Someone else followed me through and then stepped in front of me to help me walk over the debris on the ground, snakes or something. I never looked at this thing, but I knew it was dark. In the third example, I then felt my body slipping down, not straight down, but on an angle as if on a slide. It was cold, dark, and watery. When I reached the bottom, it resembled the entrance to a cave with what looked like webs hanging. The inside of the cave was gray and brown in color. I heard cries, wails, moans, and the gnashing of teeth. I saw these beings that resembled humans, but with the shape of a head and body, but they were ugly and grotesque. I remember colors like red, green, and purple, but can't positively remember if these things were the colors of the beings. They were frightening and sounded like they were tormented in agony. No one spoke to me. I never went inside the cave, but stood at the entrance only. I remember saying to myself, I don't want to stay here. I tried to lift myself up as though trying to pull myself, my spirit, up out of this pit. That's the last thing I remember. And then the discussion and conclusions. Based on findings from 5 previous studies, Grayson and Evans-Bush conclude that there is no reason to question the mental health or psychological state of any group of individuals simply on the basis of their having reported near-death experiences, be it pleasant or unpleasant, and note the ambiguity of efforts to account for experiences on the grounds of medication, anesthesia, the role of neurotransmitters, psychological explanations, and other agents to which NDEs are frequently attributed. Their article concludes, the after effects of the distressing near-death experience have not yet been studied systematically. However, our preliminary observations indicate that ontological fear is a common result of the experience. Future investigations of the after effects of distressing experiences may clarify their relationship to more familiar post-traumatic stress syndrome, yield important clinical insights for the individual involved, and help clarify the near-death experience's meaning and relevance to life. Here the article ends. My thanks and appreciation to the International Association for Near-Death Studies and to Vital Signs for all they do. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived, ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE Radio site and hit the Past Shows button. Or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE Radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE Radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.